I asked you how you really got started in knowing all the people from the theater and collecting all the information that you had about them. And you said that one incident comes to mind that would, that really was a starting place.
That was, there was an English actor named Austin Fairman that lived over in Salisbury. He'd appeared on Broadway in a number of English plays, and he got the idea of starting a summer theater. And he came to Doylestown, and he came into the newspaper to see me, and he asked about starting a summer theater in the Doylestown High School auditorium. And I took him to a meeting of the school board. And of course, I thought, you know, go over big. Instead of that, it fell right flat on its face because the board was not at all enthusiastic, and they told him that he would not be allowed to put a nail in the walls, and he would not be allowed to put up any lights, and they made everything just as difficult for him as they could. So he lost interest in the Doylestown High School auditorium. And Doylestown might have had summer theater. If they had been a little more receptive, don't you know? And of course, there are all those laws about the school building, you know, only being used for certain purposes. Of course, this goes way back to the middle 1930s, you know. So then he somehow, I don't know just how, but he got a hold of the Grange Hall out at Buckingham, and he gave two plays there. With one with The Pursuit of Happiness and other with Ten Minute Alibi. And the actors lived at the Bucks County Inn. It was an equity, all equity cast of professionals. And they were good productions. He was allowed, he had more freedom there. He could put up spots on the wall and create sets and that sort of thing.
Is the stage large enough there?
Well, he fitted it in. He was a good director, don't you know? They were good productions. But after 2 weeks, they just collapsed. And I mean, there wasn't enough attendance. And then, of course, what left a horrible taste in the mouth of everyone was when the actor skipped out from the Bucks County, it was called the Bucks County Inn, without paying their bills. That was the last word for summer theater in Doylestown. And so, But he really broke the ground for summer theater. Then the next summer theater idea that came along, well, of course, that was high power. That was St. John Terrell, who was an actor. I saw him with Burgess Meredith and Margot and Richard Bennett in Maxwell Anderson's Winterset. He played the part of a singer. He was not a particularly good actor. He had some part on a radio movie, a serial, something called The American Boy or something like that. Well, he got to know some people in New Hope, and there was a production in Philadelphia called Five Kings, Orson Welles and Burgess Meredith, and I forget who else was in it. They took five Shakespearean plays and put them together, if you can imagine that, a telescope, and they took the five kings out of these five Shakespearean plays. Chad and I saw it in the Chester Street Opera House in Philadelphia. I think it lasted until 2 o'clock in the morning. You couldn't tell where one play began and one play ended, so you wish you had a hell of a time as to which king you were looking at, don't you know? But there was that marvelous scene where one of the Henrys woos the French princess? And you know, he speaks, was it Henry V? I think it was. He speaks English, you know, and she speaks French.
Oh, it's a marvelous scene.
I'll never forget that. I can't remember who the actress was. Somebody lovely, you know, beautiful. Well, anyway, then St. John Terrell had gone around New Hope, don't you know, see? And I mean, he had more knowledge of how to get things across. For instance, there were cocktail parties and things like that. I remember I went to one cocktail party once again when Orson Welles was there and Burgess Meredith. And of course, Orson Welles, I can't remember what his nickname was, but he called Burgess Meredith Buzz. And all the two did was to tell each other, now don't drink too much, remember tomorrow night. Monday night we have to go to work. Well, to make a long story short, St. John Terrell and a woman stage manager, remind me a little bit of you, her name was Elizabeth North. They teamed up, and it's very unusual, you She was the stage manager for us for the Green Bay Trio with Olivier and James Thayer. And she said how Jed Harris just stood over that production with a horsewhip and said, "You dare not dance this up. You dare not flounce this around. They will take us off to jail." Because it was a very subtle, repressed homosexuality in it, but it was never mentioned.
Never.
It was a group Atkinson said it was drenched in luxury, don't you know? See, for instance, he put on gloves, James Day, to arrange flowers, and he always ate at a little table by himself, don't you remember? Well, Elizabeth North, when I got to know her, you know, she was the stage manager. Well, now, you see, what they did is, St. John went, like, to all the service clubs. Elizabeth North went, like, to all the women's clubs and all the Granges. And, you see, they talked about the Bucks County Playhouse and how it would take money and how they could reconvert this old mill and all that. You see, they laid all that groundwork. Oh, and they were magnificent New York know-how. See, and they did it. See, so that by the time the Playhouse was ready, don't you know, see, everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
And of course, I'll never forget the opening night, what was it, 1939, in June, the beginning of June of 1939. And I remember what he put all the way from the street to the Playhouse. There was a gauntlet of people. It was just like being at a wedding. You walk through this aisle of this gauntlet of people. And all these people that couldn't get in, you know, see, there were only about a little, but there weren't quite 500 seats in the Playhouse, so there were only 500 people to get in the Playhouse. And you see, all these people came there from all around just to see the celebrities. Now, of course, they didn't see celebrities. I mean, there's George Kaufman, Beatrice Kaufman, you know, Mozart. He wasn't married then yet. And then, you know, there was Jack Curtin, the back row, and he was married to Ayla Stoddard, who was in the cast, Edward Everett Horton. Edward Everett Horton played the lead. It was springtime for Henry. Mm-hmm. And Julie Hyde was in it. Was her delicacy. Of course, she was just wonderful. It was an English play, English comedy. And of course, then St. John, he was a showman. You know, he, yes. Just look what he did with the music circus, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And was he there a year or two with the Playhouse? No, I'm not sure. He wasn't there much longer.
Not very long.
Not long, no. One of the criticisms of him was, I mean, he was theater. So you see, if it called for something, take like a breastplate or an armor, well, you know, St. John would just go to New York or Philadelphia and get one. It didn't make a difference how much it cost, you know. Mm-hmm. See, we don't fake anything. Oh, no, it's going to be the real thing, don't you know? See? And I understand that they didn't make a great deal of money, don't you? But oh, in Florence, people came up from the main line. People came from Maryland, people came from Washington, people came from Allentown, people came from all around. You couldn't get a seat. It was night after night. It was standing room only.
Just imagine.
And then, of course, you see, in 1939, it wasn't long until you're beginning to get into gasoline, rationing. And Phil Bamberger followed St. John. And he was more of a money man. St. John had Robert Milton, who used to direct the Lunts and was a theater guild director, see. But Theron, he wasn't as much interested in having an artistically perfect production as St. John was. And then, you know, he was the one that moved it down to the Bellevue during the gasoline rationing during the war years. It played in the ballroom in the Bellevue. And then, of course, you know, Tallulah made that wonderful crack. He asked Tallulah to play, and she said she didn't intend for people to sleep in the theater, so she didn't intend to play to people in the hotels. With a crack, typical baghead, wasn't it? Yeah. And then you see, he came back to New Hope, and then I think he had a stroke, didn't he?
I died. I don't know.
Yes.
On that period.
Yeah. And then, you know, see, Mike Ellis was next.
Oh, yes.
And he was, I would say, he was the most progressive, the most imaginative. He got these new playwrights. And I just saw I was over there interviewing Mike Ellis about something, and I saw this taxi drive up with these two young men, and Neil Simon was one of them, and he had the manuscript of Come Blow Your Horn. And there was another young man got out, and he was a Mildred Natwick in. Yes, they had Mildred Natwick in and Robert Redford. Yeah, just think, who was just a Jew.
And Grace Kelly.
And what?
Grace Kelly.
Oh, yes, she was there. Yes, yes, she was there. Oh, yeah, he had the faculty of getting stars. You know, stars to carry a play, you know. See, Helen Hayes and her daughter were there. Helen Hayes and Mary, you know, Mary McKinnon. Oh,
yes,
I wrote a letter to Helen Hayes and said, well, how glad I was that she knew that her daughter could play with her. And she wrote back and thanked me for the letter. And I also mentioned that Alexander Wilkin was her godfather, you know, see. And after she died, after she was stricken, Mary McGraw had paralysis, if not paralysis, she would have died. But Helen Hayes wrote me a letter.
Oh, wasn't that
a said it was almost unbearable for her. So poignant to think that that was the only time she never thought that was the only time they'd be on the stage together. It was in an English play, it was maybe quite contrary or something like that.
Yes, I think I saw it. I think I saw it.
So then, of course, by Alice, and under him, the theater was the most successful and the most brilliant. Never Too Late. It was about an elderly couple that have a baby late in life. Orson B was in it, and I forget who else was in it, but, when it was on Broadway. But see, a lot of those plays, they had different names by the time we got to Broadway, see? They'd been rewritten and retitled. But, you know, he began to feel the pinch of it took too much money for the production, too much overhead, and not big enough
house.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, with less than 500.
Wally Parker wasn't
here.
Oh, yes.
With Mike Ellis.
How long did Mike Ellis stay
there?
Not much, just, you know, having read some of his papers.
I don't
know him personally. So
why do you have to keep quiet?
No, it doesn't have to be.
No, I have to keep quiet.
He's not a friend.
There were some indiscretions. I'm afraid not. But there were some indiscretions. Financially.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I don't know those three years.
I'll tell it shortly. I saw Lifeboat over.
they live up here for the summer, or were they entertained?
Oh, they lived here all the time.
They did?
They lived here all the time. But you see, it was like Dorothy Parker said, like she said, we bought the place with the idea it would be a chance to get away from things.
Yes.
Then she said, we find out we need this, we need that, we need something else. So she said, we've got to go back to Hollywood to get money in order to live here.
Yes.
So she said, we're trapped. We spent more time in Hollywood trying to make money to live here, and just it didn't cost that, like it does now.
But
for instance, Dorothy Parker's 111-acre farm was maybe, what, $25,000 or $30,000, just think.
They also had tax breaks then.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, sure. But fixing up those old buildings.
Oh, yes. Oh,
so very, and to the standards they would want,
that cost
used to be.
And they all had to have swimming pools, don't you know, see?
Oh, my.
But you see, you take George Kaufman, and Moss Hart. You see, in those days, you could drive to New York along Route 202. Well, you only had a couple of traffic lights.
Yes.
And you were in New York. See, it was so easy.
Well, it's easier now again.
Then you see, gas rationing cars drove them all back.
Yeah, I see.
See, because you see, they couldn't go back and forth more than maybe once a month, or hardly that.
That's right.
See, so that was the war, you know, see, that did that. So,
did that break up the really genius period, the war?
I think so. I think it would have broken up anyway, because, I think all those people, don't you think that they all live like in cycles? You know, one year it's this place, and the next year it's in some other place, and the next year it's some other place, don't you know, see?
And you think this was just a cycle?
I think so, yes. And particularly that theater cycle, because you see, Morris Hart and Kaufman would have people like Harpo Marx, you know, and they have all their friends from the movies, you know, on the stage, you know, Gertrude Lawrence. I know for a fact that the real estate bank here, all parts of the DA, around my whole name, and he didn't find anything that he liked. But you see, in those days, Bucks County, because of its proximity to New York, because of its low taxes, see, as Jim Michener puts it, I was like, he put it, he said, it was a poor man's Connecticut.
Well, Grace Moore lived in my
house. Yeah, see, and everything. And then you take up there through Pleasant Valley, was all that section with Jack Kirkland.
Oh, really?
And oh, sure, Jack Kirkland. Jack Kirkland. And as I said, Hayla Stoddard, his wife Hayla Stoddard. Then there was what was it? Alan Moretz, who wrote The Log 17. They were all a part of it. They were all a part. They were all interested in the Bucks County Playhouse.
I wondered what Grace Moore was doing so far north.
They were all in that colony.
They could get the French town.
They bought those lovely old homes, you know, and the lovely old stone houses, and then those nice secluded farms, you know, sure.
Because you could ride along those roads and never dream what's up there.
You see that S.J. Girlman up there? You had Josephine Herbst. You had Dorothy Parker out of town up there. See,
did they live there?
Oh, yes.
Do any of the theater people, do you think, still own homes?
I don't think so.
Not any?
I don't think so.
Where do they live?
I think that's all over.
You do?
And you know, lived around Newport. He was in the 7-year itch.
I knew there were diplomats. I know there were.
Lived down there in that Brownsburg area, you know, Florence, in the Jericho Mountain. See?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I was told there were a number of diplomats who lived up in the Haycock up in the above the Vermont region. And I didn't know whether any theater people lived up there, but
You know, Whitaker Chambers, and who was it? His ally, and then later foe, you know?
Yes.
The State Department guy that was convicted and went to jail. They lived up around Smithtown.
They did.
But you see, the thing is, I could see Whitaker Chambers on the street in Doylestown. I might think that was like Whitaker Chambers, don't you know?
Did the Playhouse go downhill pretty fast?
Yeah.
And when my house was no longer associated with it?
Yeah. like, you know. He got into a feud with the Playhouse crowd. And of course, you see, there were some of those people over there that were with me. There were people like the Chapins. You know, Mrs. Chapin was oh, she was wonderful. She was the daughter of Dr. Henry Van Dyke, who wrote America the Beautiful.
No, the history of the world.
He wrote that, but I can't remember. But anyway, you see, they put a lot of money in the play. Then there were people by the name of Coles, C-O-L-E. I don't know who they were. I went to their home one time. They had a lot of money. And you see,
they're still there.
The artist's wife, Mrs. Fox. See, they were the type of people, you know, that would save a lot of people $1,000. Tom Ewell, that's the actor I'm trying to think of. Tom Ewell, seven-year-ish. See, he lived out there south of Newell. He was a comedian, you know.
But St. John feuded with him.
Yes, then he got into a feud with him. And he said, I will come back to the valley and drive you out of the business. Damn well, thank you. Original idea, a musical. All it was a musical in the round.
That's right.
But only a singer would do it. You know how he did it. Put up that tent with all those colors and flamboyance, you know, and everything. And then you know, who did he get? He had all those musical comedy movie actresses. I forget who they were now. The Kevin Grayson or people like that.
Yeah.
Somebody, you know, see. It just went over. That was the Playhouse all over again. It was just standing room every night.
And when that happened, the Playhouse wasn't standing.
Oh no, the Playhouse had opened it by that time. It just stood empty, just in the dark.
How long was it dark?
Oh my. That stood there a long time. And I think sometimes, maybe did amateur groups use it? Or they tried having movies, didn't they?
There were several attempts, I think.
Yeah. Then of course, you know, the music circus went to pop. Well, there's a limit as to how often somebody wants to see Rose Parade or the Student's Prince or South Pacific.
That's right.
You know. And you see the musical they up today.
They
can't cast. No, they can't cast. You can't have and of course, you know, well, I remember, you know, I told you the story about Robert Goulet. You know how Robert Goulet, then St. John branched out into big bands and one night showed, one performer shows, Robert Goulet was one of them. That you know how when he was over here playing golf at the country club, you know, Dave Barnett got a tip about sending me down. Remember the time I told that? Yeah.
So, he did a lot of those.
And Liberace. He had Liberace. But then you see, there again, it's economics. You see, Liberace would ask what? Maybe $100,000 now? Way back then, see, or neither did Robert Goulet, don't you know, because they didn't have the oomph and the clout they have now.
One of my great regrets in the art scene in this county is that Sundance was not when it got into economic trouble.
Yes.
Liz explained the other day that was really meant for a tax write-off. I always wondered why they guaranteed 264 people.
Yeah.
They knew if they charged a certain amount of money, they were going to lose money. They brought the best people.
Oh, and I must tell you, something else that was here when the Playhouse was here, and that was a group that started some theater down in Yardley. You remember that in the town hall in Yardley? You know, Yardley comes about. It's been spoiled, but Yardley used to be about as near New England.
Oh, really?
As you could come. Oh yes, it was just such a quiet little town, and you know lurid advertising barns and shopping centers and blah blah blah. Well, a group came over and started a summer stock in the community hall in Yardley. And the idea was to draw audiences from Trenton and that part of New Jersey. But it never caught on. But for one thing, there wasn't the surrounding. See, it wasn't as lovely as the Bucks County. in there. They're just going to draw the audiences, don't you?
Charlie Shaw was reminiscing the other people. He returned in the Gazette and we were talking about people like George C. Scott.
Yes.
And apparently they came in more recent years than I was aware of.
Yeah.
That group got there.
Yeah.
And Patty Larson Vine's father was whom Penny does all of this.
George Price.
That's a
musical company actor. Yes, I used to see him years and years ago.
Yes, he used to be around town.
Yeah. He was one of the first. He was one of the men. Of course, he belonged in the era of Joseph and Eddie Cantor. But he was a little ahead of his time. He underplayed Florence. He was the beginning of almost like the Marx Brothers. I mean, he did it all with his voice. He didn't blacken his face like Al Jolson and make up, you know, get down on his knees and you know, boom out. He underplayed. So he played the lead in a good many musicals. He was very clever, George Price. He could dance and he could sing. Yes, that was Penny Larson's papa.
Do they still live here?
Pardon?
Does he still live around here?
He never lived here.
No, he didn't.
No, he retired. He left the stage. In his time, those were the type of musicals, Florence, when they had Marilyn and Miller and Helen Roderick, and you know, they had the two or three of the actors and actresses that carried the company, and then, you know, they had the beautiful girls that strutted around. Yeah, the Corrines, you know, remember?
Well, yeah.
The beauties, you know, see, the strutted around and danced, see. But Georgie Price was a dancer, too. Yeah.
Did Michener ever take an interest in the Playhouse?
No. He wasn't anybody yet, part of that.
Oh, I see.
That came too late for him. He was older by that time.
Because, you know, you hear that there's
but Sid,
money.
Sid was such a show, man. I'll never forget one time he said to me, you know, he said, I've been up to see Dottie Parker. Of course, you know, with him, everybody was first name. It would be Lillian. He were just like that, you know. Maybe they were, I don't know. But anyway, he went up to see Dottie Parker, and he said, she's going to do Hedda Gabler. I said, my God, Sid John. Why, I said, she never speaks above a whisper. Oh, I said, that's all right. He said, what do you call she's going to do? Idea of doing Hedda Gabler and Amanda Lou. That was all St. John's talk, you know. He talked a good game. Yeah.
He's done very good. He's done Washington.
Oh, exactly.
Yes, he likes to play.
Yeah. I remember one
very good.
Yeah.
This takes us. I remember one evening, Chad and I went to the theater. This was so good. This was in 1939. And we were walking. When we got to the theater, St. John was on the steps. Of course, he rushes down and weeps. And Chad whispered to him, she said, my God, he has no shirt. Well, what he had on was, this is the beginning of color shirts. It was such a pale pink shirt. See, the
shirt.
It looked like skin.
So I remember pink shirt.
It looked like skin.
Yeah.
The rest was all nude, you know. But oh, and you know, he passed off his the mother and his sister. Remember that? Anybody would know, remember me. You take like Eli Wallach.
Why not here? Why can there be Summer Theater other places?
There's hardly Summer Theater anywhere.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. They each year they fall by the wayside.
They do.
You look in the New York Times, I can remember when it came time, for June, the New York Times would go all out for Summer Theater. This year, they ran Summer Theater in a single column, just Pennsylvania, then New Jersey and Vermont. They're only like two or three in Vermont. I think there's only two in Maine. I think Muskogee didn't open this year, which is one of the oldest summer theaters along the coast. Yeah.
Is it because it's now so expensive to put on the...
And it's so expensive to get the scenery there, to get the productions. It just costs too much money.
Everything is.
Yeah. And you see, they can't charge. They don't want to charge. Well, they can't. Nobody's going to pay $15 to go to summer theater. See, summer theater began, Florence, years and years, way back in the 1930s. And Ethel Barrymore was one of the first ones. The idea was that they could appear in a... Now, Ethel Barrymore always appeared in very dressy plays. All right. She wanted to do something where she didn't have to be dressed up. All right. We do that in summer theater. There was an actress by the idea was that they that all these people would have a chance to do something they could not possibly do on Broadway. No producer would let them do it. But they did it in summer theater. That's how summer theater began.
No.
And it was wonderful.
Couldn't it stay on that nice informal basis?
No. No.
Couldn't
it? It's just too much money. And it's like Helen Hayes' son told me, a young MacArthur, when I interviewed him at Celeste Holm. He said, if mother comes to New Hope and they pay her $300 or $500, that means no producer will ever want to pay her more because he will say, well, you went to New Hope for $500, didn't you? You went to New Hope for $300.
There can't be 2 cents of rules. You've got to do
it. It's such a real estate game here because the producer is determined to get the most returns for his money that he will not hire Hayes unless, what do you call it? You know. Unless he's sure that she's going to bring in box office, they can make money on it. He said this. He said even she went to the Playhouse in the Park. That's where our theater. Now, don't repeat myself. I haven't listened a little bit the other time. That's where our theater is so different from Florence, from England. See these marvelous actors like Ralph Richardson, Sir Ralph Richardson, Sir John Gielgud can play a walk-on part in England, can turn right around and play a lead in London. And they will not lose their money, they will not lose their prestige. Of course, you see, there isn't as much money involved. See? But they cannot do it in the United States.
They're trying to pack the house this summer.
Yeah.
Attracting the younger people.
Yeah.
So they have Godspell 2 or 3 times.
Yes.
Yes.
I saw it with God off. I saw it in Philadelphia. Sure, it's all rock and roll. I didn't understand 3 words because it was so loud.
Mm.
You know? And I couldn't pick up that drum.
Yeah.
In England, at the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, they have a thing on Sunday nights where there are no sets. You're not allowed, by under English law, to wear costumes and have sets on Sunday. And they simply come in a black leotard and socks, and they're sort of there in a row, and they're doing they're putting on some scenes, 2 or 3 scenes from play, and it's one of the most exciting nights of the week.
Now,
why couldn't, if you got top flight people, and it's only so good because it is top flight, why couldn't that kind of thing be done?
Well,
you wouldn't need any scenery, you wouldn't need any costumes.
I think one thing, Barnes, here in America, I think, for instance, is television. You see, people are so used to this god-awful Jackie Gleason crap on television, don't you know, see? And all this one-line business, you know?
Well, people listen to television in England.
I don't think they have the same time for it.
Well, no, it isn't.
I don't think they go in.
Bad.
It isn't quite as broad, and I mean vulgar, and not in the sense of the lewd or lascivious or that way, but I mean vulgar in the sense that it really is vulgar. Just plain, ordinary common.
Yeah.
You know, that having a family thing, a series that becomes a hit just because it's a put down. You know, I've never listened to it, but wasn't the son or the father Polish or something else?
Yeah.
And all of this is put down, really.
But isn't one ethnic group as another?
Yeah, people are smashed their television sets, really, over such crap, and that gets hot, really.
I hate to say what we'll have this fall.
Then you see, they tried to have something American. Like, what was it, an American upstairs, downstairs?
Yeah.
Right, flat his face. See? That didn't go at all. They made it a Boston Brahmin family, you know, and then with the servants, you know, and everything, didn't buy that.
But everyone was scrambling to listen to upstairs, downstairs, and also the thing on the life of Churchill.
Yeah.
Everyone was listening to that. Everyone I know. It was a great thing to do, you know, every Sunday. But why can't we do it?
Of course, my pet peeves when it comes to the theater, when I think of a magnificent actress like Alice Brady, those silly harebrained roles in the movies, and then to think a magnificent Fanny Bryce had to go to her grave with that goddamn baby Snooks routine. Just imagine somebody like Fanny Bryce. She could do what Florence says. She could stand on the stage all by herself in the village and with a piano and recreate for you numbers that would just make your heart burst.
You can imagine a better scene to me than anybody can build.
Exactly.
And it just seems a shame. You don't think that even that an occasional evening, given the right kind of publicity, somebody really famous doing something? Because there's such an audience now for Shakespeare and some of the classical plays. You'd think that get Redford to come down, get Ian Richardson to come down and do. In England, they'll switch parts. He'll play the lead one night, and then another actor plays the night. They switch around.
But you take Sir John Gielgud can get up on that stage all by himself and make Shakespeare come to life.
While
I never saw him, well, what do you call it? A friend of mine saw him, and they said, when he played some of those old kings and old villains, they just said his face got all ashy. You just look like the guy. Now that's art when you and his voice, see, just
need the lights to.
Sure. But you see that's genius, really, when the way they do that.
It seems a shame we can't attract any. We can't think of some way to attract some of that talent.
Well, of course, I was amused today at McFadden. He went to see was the House of the Leaves. He didn't like the play. See, that's one of those plays that, like most plays today, they aren't cut to a pattern. They don't solve anything, which was a mistake. You know, life doesn't solve anything either. We just go in and get up and go to bed, get up and go to bed. You know, we don't solve it each day. And he said, I like theater like that. That isn't all tied up. And, you know, our novels are no longer all tied up with nice ribbons on. Oh, it's a happy ending, see? See, he didn't like that.
No.
See?
He wouldn't.
No. See, he isn't ready for that yet, see?
Yeah.
See?
A lot of people.
That's right, yeah.
I wish we could come up with some idea of even a minor renaissance, because I can't help but feel that some of these great actors and actresses would welcome an opportunity, and they do know that we're down here, they do know the theater's here, lots of them have had experience.
Now, I think there's something interesting going on in New York right now, and it's for the senior citizens. For instance, Celeste Holm, it's a town and they sing and talk and dance. Now, who was the first one that did it? I just read the other day in the New York Times. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
And they tell about their life. Ruth Gordon's going to do it.
Yes.
And I forget who started it off. Some musical comedy. Ooh, somebody that used to sing years and years ago. Now, some musical comedy actress. And they say the audience just goes wild. Of course, they're all senior citizens. They all remember.
Mr. Chaney that give us some advice next week. We're having Mr. Chaney come. And he has some very good connections and good ideas. Perhaps this should be brought up.
As far as
business trying to help us.
I can't believe that there isn't some way that we could get over this barrier of all the elaborate costs.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And get down to something, because if people are good enough, they don't need that.
Of course, your unions have something to do.
Oh, yeah, very much.
They wouldn't allow that.
But you know, if they have full equity over New Hope, you know, nobody who is non-equity are going on the stage.
No, not even to lift a piece.
Well, if you only had two or three people coming, the way they do in Canada on Sunday evening, in Stratford on Sunday evening,
they have an entirely different sound. They have these wonderful regional theaters over there where these young ones are learning to act.
That's true.
See, where do our young ones learn? Then they can't go into the theater, like Ellen Burstyn. Then you can't hear them, because they have not learned to project a voice without that damn mic hidden somewhere, don't you know?
That's true.
Sure. See, they haven't learned. Of course, the only reason I feel kindly toward television, my God, it keeps a lot of eating.
They
wouldn't be eating. They used to be in summer stock, but you see, they learned their trade in summer stock. They didn't learn their trade. They learned for the movies, you know, television, but they learned for the stage.
There couldn't be a way of training young actors here. We couldn't have a drama school, isn't it? Would have to be in New York.
I think it's like we're just reading the other day where Eli Wallach and only make movies so they can afford to be in the theater. Now that's facing your reality,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
See?
If they care.
It's like Jason Robards, you know, he does the same thing. See, mm-hmm. Jason Robards does that. George C. Scott does the same. It's wonderful the way those people, Fraxel Tone, see? It's wonderful the way those people can go back and forth. There's only a very limited few that can go back and forth between the stage and the movies. Very few. Colleen Dewhurst is one of them. Ben Gazzara. Very few of them that can go back and forth.
I'm glad you remembered Margaret Root. We were trying to think last time.
Yes.
I'm very fond of her.
Yes.
I remember her saying once a few years back, she tried to do some small cameo things at the Playhouse, and she said, it's so sad, they can't even afford me.
Yeah.
And she really badly.
And she's got a name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Sure.
That's very sad. Wish we could come up with some solutions, even a small one. Have you really put your mind to this, Lester?
I have no mind.
Yes, you do. More than anybody here in the county.
Look at Philadelphia. Of course, I was always sorry that they had a real off-Broadway type thing, you know, down there on South Street. Then, you know, that was too different for Philadelphia, don't you know? See, then you know, the Wallace Street Theater. Now, you see, they're giving up producing.
That's building, yes.
Yeah, see, they're giving up producing. Yes. I know he used to be my neighbor.
He did.
Al Sykes. Yeah.
He was up here.
Money. See, he brought over an English outfit and they lost money on that, and then what else did he have? They lost quite a bit of money on it. It's just this damn money all the time, you know.
In other words, you can't be theater anywhere but New York.
And that
is very changing.
Say that again, just think, mm-hmm. when you think of only what is there? Maybe one or two serious plays on Broadway right now. One is that Screamers, which is that magnificent thing up there in the bottom of the Big Ben Beaumont, you know, the Mitzi Newhouse, that Thomas Ray play, you know, it's about the Vietnam veterans, you know, and you see that won the Critics Prize. And the other thing is the River Stumbles, and that's just hanging on at the Little Theater. I don't think there's one other serious play on Broadway. See, it's just big musicals.
So it isn't only that it's gone here, but it's gone everywhere.
I think so.
Just a symptom of something. And maybe we could be imaginative enough to think of a way. You can't operate without outside of Actors' Equity, can you? Because people are all in it.
It's possible sometimes to get permission from a union, but that's usually just a one performance.
Well, sure.
For a benefit, for a
look, do you know what's happening to a chorus line in London?
No.
Open with All Americans, naturally. And they have been trying to replace it with English. And they have such problems. The first with the dancing, because you know, mm-hmm. we lead the world when it comes to musicals, to you know, to integrating dancing, dialogue, acting.
Yeah.
They come up to us. No, they're going to start bold. They cannot cast it in English. And then of course, you see, they can't make them talk like Americans. Imagine making an Englishman talk like a Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be so.
Yeah. See, can you imagine what they do? Don't you know? See. So you see, and of course, I see there again. Oh, I think that's awful. The equity only allows them, what is it, to play like 15 or 16 weeks. But you know how a wonderful English play comes over here, like with Ralph Richardson and John Gielgud and Margaret Leighton and all those. Then you know, in about 3 or 4 months, the English leave, and we have American replacements. Because you see, the American actors complain because they're puts them out of work. See, it works the same way over in London. The English actors complain, puts them out of work, see? I'm telling you, it is something, isn't it? So they are going to fold a chorus line after the Americans have to leave.
What was the last good play you saw in Bucks County, in the Playhouse? How long ago? What was it?
I just can't remember.
Because I can remember. Ever since I've known you, you've not been going to the theater.
No, because...
Here in the town.
St. John did, what do you call it, Eugene O'Neill's
Oh, that one about his early family life. You know
long
what I'm talking about?
Journey.
That early family life?
Long Day's Journey?
No. The one where he's very nostalgic. You know, the father's an editor of a newspaper. They did a huge production about the new book. But I can't remember who's in it.
I
can't think of it. I just can't think of it.
Well, ever since I've known you, you've not been going to the theater here, so it must be.
No, because I always said, my argument was that Helen Hayes is just as good in New Hope on the stage as she is on Broadway in New York. But the rest of the cast is nothing as good. So you see, when Helen Hayes leaves the stage, what do you have? A high school senior play. It just flops, just goes down, till Helen Hayes comes in again and picks up the tempo. And galvanizes the audience again.
Well, how did you feel about the play the other night? Did you went to the opening?
Of what?
Of the Bugs Bunny Playhouse?
No.
I didn't see that.
No, I didn't see that. No, I only know about reading about that, but it was in Fall Brook, New York.
Mm-hmm. Did you see it in New
York? No, I didn't.
I bet I'd enjoy it.
Well, you ought to go, Lester.
Yeah, I think you might love that.
I understand it was done well.
Because I've seen Ernie Shire in the bulletin said how well it was done.
Oh, good.
The whole cast. Yes,
well, if something good happened.
Yeah, I hope that. I hope they make some money.
Then why are you so gloomy? If something good has happened, Lester.
I know.
Why are you so gloomy?
I know.
You can't recreate the past.
No.
But maybe there's something now that we can really use. Why don't you go down to the production and see if it comes up to anything that you would have admired?
Like yeah.
And write something.
Cool.
I'll drive you down.
Well,
so help me, I
will. See once in a while.
To make him proud.
Their performances.
Yes. I think it's terribly important because if this could be compared, it could be, you know, and maybe before our workshop, unless you could come to that workshop. Because if there's something happening that's worthwhile, Lester, it should get your attention. It's your duty. Anita, let's see.
An evangelist.
Yes.
Sounds like an evangelist.
Herman has assured us that he will be there, too.
Yes.
At the workshop. And he said he would see the play later this week.
Yes, that's right. I know he's going to see it, but I'd like to have Lester see it.
Of course.
Maybe help me get Herman and take Lester.
Who?
Herman Silverman.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'd like to have Lester's comments. They would be, you know, they'd be an interesting addition to Herman's comments. Because maybe we've got something good again.
I don't know.
Maybe everything isn't dead, Lester. Sometimes things don't die when you think they die. How could they afford to do this?
By doing what they did also.
Yes.
So that they can now do something as well.
Well, I hope they don't lose their shirt.
How long
so
this
it's
season?
Fall season, well, the place is heated.
It's going to be there a couple of weeks, isn't it?
There's a schedule for the fall. I wish I could.
Or is it? Is it only through the 24th or something like that? I did see something and I forgot.
I left mine with Don Davis on Don Davis' desk.
I can check when we get to the office.
But two things you really should do.
What's that now?
One thing is you should see that play.
Yes.
The second thing is that you should mark down on your calendar on the 29th of this month to come to our workshop on the...
The 29th? What is the
29th?
Wednesday. It's an extra Wednesday this month.
Oh, yes, that's so. We get an extra payday.
And that's why we have the courthouse that night as well.
You mean September 29th?
September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way. Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't.
This is.
Where is that? Where will that be?
At the jury in the jury lounge, Broad Street entrance.
Oh, sure, that'd be easy. I can do it. I can walk.
But I think it'd be marvelous.
I'll do that.
If before you come, you could have seen the play.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
They'll let you review it.
I'll see what I can do. No, I don't want to review it.
This is what we've been sending out to business people, chambers.
And the man who's coming is an exceptional.
Here's the man.
Read that biography.
You may keep that.
Look a little bit at that. I want you to comment on that. Look at who he is. He's really a person who has got years of experience in getting people, getting public interest, and getting public support, getting business support for arts. And we hope that he's going to give us some. This is part of a series we're doing, and we hope that that we will be able to get the business community people. Have there been any of the businessmen in the county that have taken any substantial interest in the theater that you
I don't think so. Not that I know of. Are there any that you know? I don't know anything.
And I can't think of anything particularly great that has been done for any of the arts by any industry or business per se. Some of the banks have had little shows and things like that, or continuing shows, but no one has really taken on the cost of presenting some great thing, something that they could do permanently.
See, there wouldn't be the Playhouse in the Park in Philadelphia, wouldn't be the Lincoln Bank didn't underwrite.
Well, Philadelphia just built a new Dell, and that certainly had all sorts of support.
Yeah, sure.
But they had the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Arts with 60-some organizations behind them, a lot of them.
Well, the people that were here in our brilliant days were pretty oriented to New York, weren't they? And didn't really know the business, the people in the business industrial community.
No. They didn't know them.
So there really wasn't any communication between them that would give us a basis for the kind of support that we need now, which is unfortunate. But it's also inevitable because it was kind of a retreat from New York. As Jim Mitchell said, when they started the Arts Foundation, that it was really a retreat from New York.
Yeah.
More than a center, it just sort of incidentally became a center of the arts because they weren't necessarily communicating with each other. Did the painters know the actors and did the sculptors?
I don't think so. I don't think very much. Do you?
I think somewhat in the New Hope community, from what you said, for instance.
I remember Charles Child. Charles Child used to come to those parties, and Mrs. Follinsby, God rest her soul, but you know, used to come, and then as I said, those intellectual eggheads like Chapin, and some of those people came, don't you know, see?
I think at least in the New Hope community, I think that they were,
interrelated
together.
But I don't think, like Redfield or.
No.
At the theater?
No.
They had their own.
Yeah.
That seems unfortunate because it doesn't give us anything to build on. It doesn't give us any tradition with any of the firms of
making support of
the art. You have to sort of start from scratch. Make it harder. That's why we need a person like you, Lester, who has this background.
What is it that you take? Lived across the hall from her. They lived down in the village, and she got sick and died. He paid for the funeral.
Come to me.
Why is a missionary?
You would know the name.
Why has a missionary ever taken interest in the theater? Hmm? Why has a missionary? Ever
because he says Florence, he has tried, but he says dialogue for the stage, the movies, or television is one thing he positively.
I'm glad that he knows that.
Oh, that motivation that goes in there.
Yeah.
When every word motivates. That's technique.
That's
now you see George Cotton, most part, couldn't have written a novel either, see?
That's right.
See, that's the difference. See, all that extra work and all that research, that would have killed them, all that detail.
Right.
See, they just said, get up there to the stage, now do it this way, don't you know, see? Now do it the other way, don't you know? Now this is the way we like it, don't you know?
Yeah.
He says that he has respect for the people who worked on his movies.
Mm-hmm.
He said they don't, they aren't writers in the sense, you know.
Yes.
That, now, see, S.J. Perlman has it. See, S.J. Perlman has written books for musicals, One Touch of Venus. Look, he did Around the World in 80 Days. Well, he doctored that. He doctored Around the World in 80 Days. Some hacks work for that, remember? He had all the suit that was about that, you know, that they gave him all the credit and didn't give the hacks credit. But Jim Mishner says it's just wonderful. But those script writers can do it. That's all they can do, but that they can do. He said they can take your story and just break it down and push it ahead, see, to become dramatic. Or funny.
F. Scott Fitzgerald went out there to try
and
do his own books and ended up
more or less killing himself. Well, you know what the critics say about that? You know, when the book came out with F. Scott Fitzgerald, with Nathaniel West, with Faulkner? That's what the was. Well, I can't think of it. Anyway, the only one that was ever any success at and whose scripts did not have to be given to some hacks to rewrite was Faulkner. And the critics said the only reason was because he did not attempt to be pretentious. Don't you look at that? He did exactly, he just knew what he was doing. He was writing it for money, to make money, and he knew that's what the box office was working for. That's what the producer wanted. That's what he did. But you see, that took presence.
Oh yeah, sure.
Look at the nice things he did. Look at some of the nice things he did. Who did the African Queen? You remember? No, I think wasn't that James Adjaye? But you know, look how Sidney Howard did Gone with the Wind. Sure, you could tell that was theater. You sure could.
I still say, about today,
you take the movie that has Redford Dustin Hoffman. Well, I say that's not a movie, that's a play. There is absolutely no Hollywood cheapness or gimmicks in that. The way they stayed away from anything that was corny about newspaper people, bottles and hats and ties open at the neck and all that crap, you know.
Maybe we could have a fine fall theater season here if we had a popular thing in the summer. Maybe that is the possibility. Maybe the fact that there isn't.
What do you mean, just sort of experimental?
Yes. I mean, or what's going on now, you know, something that is worth doing, but follows on with a whole summer of, rather.
If we ever get the small theater we're talking about.
Yes.
In conjunction with other things, where we could do all sorts of experimental things. We're talking theater on the ground, I think, rather than.
Would we get all involved with equity there too?
I don't know. We're a nonprofit organization. I don't know.
How does equity look at Norway? Do you know?
I don't know. I've never gotten into it from that aspect.
Because we hope sometime to just have a small nonprofit experiment there. And
maybe it was an actor or teacher in residence type thing, eventually. Young people, chance.
I was upset. I don't understand. Pat, he's regressed. You know, he pulled out two or three.